Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And this is State of the Art.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. We're happy to be, well, I'm happy to be back, Michael. I wasn't here last week. I was here via telephone.
We are glad to have you back in studio, Paul. We missed you immensely, but we're excited to hear about your trip to New York in a little more detail than
It was good. I had a good time. My mom turned 70, so I went back to spend some time with her and also celebrate an early Father's Day with my dad. Lucky enough to still have both of them and relish any time I have with them. I told you we had a little bit of an issue with the I had a little bit of an issue with the cab. Monica.
Last week. Yeah. Is it a cab accident, right?
Well, two of them. Two cab rides, 2 days, 2 accidents. We got rear-ended in one, and then Monica and I were sideswiped in another.
What are the odds of that?
I know, really. I should push
it. Well, being that it is New York probably about every 15 minutes, right?
Yeah, probably. But never had good luck in cabs. Never did. Oh, you know what? Before I get into my cab story, I want to tell anyone listening that about 10 minutes after the hour, we are going to have our call-in guest today, which I'm very excited about, the one, the only, Florence Henderson.
That's right. I am so excited as well. I mean, everybody's favorite Brady lady, as they say, right?
Yeah, among a number of other things. She's, I've been looking at her bio. I had no idea what an extensive resume she has. And
huge.
Yeah, I know. And all these different things, too. The Flow H Club is really fascinating. We'll get into all of that. But before I went into my little cab story, I wanted to let people know who's coming up. As I said, I bad experiences in cabs. Bad experiences in cabs. And not necessarily bad, but humiliating. So I said quite possibly the stupidest thing I've ever said as a grown man to a cab driver in a cab in Chicago.
In Chicago.
I did. I was out with my friend Kevin Tice, who is a great actor and director in Chicago, who's actually doing a production right now, Oak Park Theater Festival's production of Mice and Men. Mm-hmm. He's doing George in that, and it's getting great reviews. So if you're in Chicago, Oak Park area, be sure to catch that one. But we had gone out, and let's just say we had sought some solace in the grape.
Oh, really?
Yes. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the most polite way to put it.
I would say so,
yes. Maybe sought solace in barley. That's probably a better way to put
or
it.
Or just a bar.
Yeah.
There you go.
And so humiliating thing said in the cab. I pay the cab driver. He drops me off where I'm going. And, there's that awkward silence you have after you've paid, but you're waiting like for your change, and there's really not a whole lot to say, and I'm not a big fan of the awkward silence anyway.
Right.
So, Michael, don't ask me why I said this, because it's the stupidest thing I've ever said, and I'm probably building it up too much, but it's just that stupid. I pay him. I'm waiting for my change. He says to me, "Have a good night," and I say, "Goody, goody." Goody, goody.
But
Michael, first of all, I've never said goody, goody in my life, much less to a cab.
That's a Teresa Brewer song, I think, isn't it?
Have a good night. Goody, goody. And of course, he responded with like nothing. So the awkward silence I was worried about before saying goody, goody was like more cavernous post goody, goody.
Well, hopefully he'll remember you and not charge you so much the next time. But, you know, Paul, I too had a situation here in Los Angeles while you were gone, not with a cab necessarily, because God knows we can barely get them on the phone, let alone see them on the street.
True, very true.
At a Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's, for those of you listening, if you don't have one in your area, they are a healthy chain of supermarkets, really small supermarkets, and very popular here in Southern California. I'm pulling up to their parking lot,
okay,
in Studio City, to the store in Studio City.
Been to that one, yes.
Yes, and in front of the store, there is a parking area, and then it is separated by a grassy knoll that has a concrete curb going all the way around it.
And how many gunmen were in the grassy knoll? How many? It is L.A., after
yeah,
all.
Yeah, really. Only two that evening.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
And I am gathering my things in the car, getting ready to get out of the car. A car pulls into the spot next to me, And it is a woman in her mid-40s pulling in. And as she's pulling in, she's holding up her phone and texting at the same time, which is what got my attention.
Right, yeah.
And she continues to get out of her car, and I'm just sitting there in amazement that she's doing all of this kind of so fluidly, right? And gets out of her car, proceeds to walk to Trader Joe's, and falls over, you know, trips on the concrete
around the knoll,
and goes face down into the grass, hand above her head, still texting, gets herself up.
Still texting.
Through the fall. Gets herself up and upright and continues walking into Trader Joe's, still texting.
Oh, see, now that's
astounding.
That's a junkie. That's a texting junkie.
But this wasn't a kid. This wasn't a teenager. This was a woman in her mid-40s.
Well, I tell you, I saw someone on Olympic Boulevard who is probably the son of this woman on a Vespa. going, you know, Olympic Boulevard, busy street at Olympic at the 405, right near where the breakdown offices are. And both hands off the handlebars of the Vespa.
Yes.
Flying down the road, texting. While on the fly.
Unbelievable.
And so, you know, obviously...
On the 405?
No, on the Olympic, going under
the 405.
You know, the 405 goes over the Olympic.
Right.
And just right Main Street, you know, just texting while on a Vespa. I was like, okay, this is just, there's something wrong with this.
Wow. Yeah. That's scary. And, you know, the ticket for being seen on your cell phone by a policeman is, I believe, in the neighborhood of $250, $300.
It should be.
Isn't that enough enticement to put it down?
Yeah. No, it should be. I mean, and they said, you know, as far as people talking on their cell phones, it's not really the act of talking or even operating the machine, you know, the phone or whatever. It's removing yourself mentally from that place. You know, even if you're talking to someone in your car who's your passenger or whatever, you're in the same, you know, space together. The talking on a cell phone just mentally takes you somewhere else. And texting takes you. Monica and I were driving down one of the canyon roads. I think it was Laurel. And, you know, those are windy roads. And just a girl right next to us, right alongside windy road, texting at exactly the same time. And Monica is not one to shout out the window at people. She's much more...
Were there profanities involved on this?
Of course not. She's from Chicago.
Oh, of course.
They don't swear. They don't swear in Chicago. I miss my Chicago days, I gotta say. Speaking of the... I don't know if I have time for this, because I think that Miss Henderson is going to call about 10 after the hour, but I'm hoping to fit it in. The second most humiliating thing that ever happened to me also happened to me in Chicago, revolving around a hot dog.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Oh,
Lord. Brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Brace yourselves.
Speaking of awkward silences.
Oh, exactly.
Lord. In a nutshell, I had never seen... In Chicago, you can have a hot dog or you can have a Polish sausage. They serve both. But a lot of times they won't write out sausage. They'll just write Polish. Mm-hmm. And being from Connecticut, I had never seen it written that way. So I thought it read hot dog and Polish. Meaning that Polish was sort of like a hot dog with the works type of deal.
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
And because, you know, I saw it was more. Because, you know, they're bigger. So, you know, $2 for a hot dog, $3 for a one with Polish or mm-hmm. so, I thought. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened to me. I don't know why I created the whole thing in my head. And I went in and I ordered a hot dog. And he's like, what do you want on that? And I became like Barney Fife. I was like, hey, just polish it up there. Go ahead, polish that bad boy. And he's like, excuse me? I said, yeah, just polish it up there. I'm just going up to Mount Pilot with Thelma Lou for a picture show.
You know? And how old were you polling?
See, why does everyone ask me that?
I've never heard a story like that before.
Oh, humility. And then as these words are coming out of my mouth, I'm going, oh, my God, it's Polish sausage. It's not Polish. It's not another term for the works.
A discredit to the very dog itself, right?
You know where hot dog comes from?
Where?
They used to call them Yankee Stadium.
I'm afraid to ask, but go ahead.
Yankee Stadium, they used to call them, the vendors used to, they were hot dachshund sausages. And the guys at Yankee Stadium would shout, you know, get your hot dachshund sausages was just too much of a mouthful to get out. So they shortened it to hot dogs.
Wow.
Wow. Useless crap stuck in my head, Michael.
And do you go to the Dodgers games here?
Mm.
And what is the typical cost of a Dodger dog?
I don't know. I haven't been to one recently. I went to a number of them early on when we first got out here, but I haven't been in a long time. But you know, it's the ballpark, so it's ridiculously overpriced. It's like the movie theater. It's just, you know,
what, $13-$14 a hot dog? Is
actually,
that possible?
$26.50.
Well, that sounds like the parking lot charge.
Yeah.
That's possible, right?
Could
insane
be.
In
Could
Los
be.
Angeles.
So, but anyway, so that's stories of Chicago, stories of being in New York, and really enjoyed my time there. Had a good time with my nieces and nephews. Took them to Times Square, Monica and I, and my sister and my mom. We went all through Times Square. We were walking around. We had New York pizza. You know, it was just a nice thing to share with them. We really enjoyed spending the time with them.
Well, it sounds like it. And I saw some photographs of your family in the newspaper, the local newspaper.
Yes, yes, of all four generations. My mother is 70, as I said, and my grandmother is 90. And then the my sister was in the picture, and my niece Julia is in the picture. So, oh, and I think we have a Florence Henderson on the phone. So let's see what if we
all
do.
I'm excited.
One moment. You are on the air with State of the Arts. Is this Miss Henderson?
This is Miss Henderson.
Oh, hello. This is Paul Strolley speaking, and Michael is here as well. Say hello, Michael.
Hello, Florence. Michael Sterling. Welcome to the show.
I'm just going to connect you, Paul. And
we're not actually with her yet. Okay.
Not yet.
Okay. Hold on
one moment, please.
Okay.
Thank
you.
Stand in. Yes.
This is exciting.
It is exciting to have a stand-in.
Yes.
Call in.
I want one of those.
Yeah, I think we should all have one.
I think we have her. I'm not sure, but...
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, you can, and you are on the air. Hello, Miss Henderson. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Paul.
Hi, Paul.
How are you?
This is Michael Sterling. How are you, Florence?
And how are the...
We are good. We are good. There's a little bit of choppiness, so I missed just a little bit of what you said, but it sounded something along the lines of asking us how we were, and we are fine.
Yes, I hear you loud and clear. I hope you hear me all right.
Yeah, there you go. It seems to have resolved itself. Thank you.
Oh.
We can't really thank you enough for being on one of our earlier shows. This is only our fourth broadcast. And we're just delighted to have you on. And Michael and I were just discussing before you came on the air. I was really astounded looking at the material that was supplied to us of the depth of your resume, Ms. Henderson. I had no idea how much you had done. And I went on YouTube and watched some of the clips. And you got some pipes. I was very impressed.
Yes, I, singing is just a part of me. It's been a part of my life, music, you know, since I was born, I think. My mother said I came out singing.
And you had to do a significant amount of singing to get noticed of being the youngest of 10, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. You're not kidding.
Well, and Florence, you were on Broadway by the time you were 18 years old.
That's right.
So,
that's
Well,
I was very, very fortunate because I got sponsored to New York right out of high school to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts. Mm-hmm. And I just am so grateful for that. As a matter of fact, my mentor when I was in high school, when I was a senior, was Christine Johnson Smith, who just passed away at 98.
Oh, my goodness.
And she created the role of Aunt Nettie in Carousel.
Oh, wow.
She sang You'll Never Walk Alone,
mm-hmm.
and June is Busting Out All Over, that great music. And she really, was the one that said, this child deserves a break. And that's how I got to New York.
Oh, wow. Wow. And then, of course, your Broadway debut was in Joshua Logan's show, Wish You Were Here.
Yes. Yes, and what a thrill to work with him. He was just amazing. And I, of course, was so thrilled to be living my dream because that's all I ever wanted to be was on Broadway and be a musical comedy performer.
And you certainly accomplished that shortly after that period. I mean, I would understand that you were
1 year.
Basically
mm-hmm.
stolen away by Rodgers and Hammerstein and put into the National Tour of Oklahoma.
That's right. Absolutely. And, you know, that was a great learning opportunity for me because I was so young. And doing 8 shows a week and having, you know, to be there and be fresh. And I was really learning my craft while I was having a ball.
Well, you'd be hard-pressed to find other, you know, more impressive people to learn the craft from. I mean, to have Rodgers and Hammerstein, you know, just
I know.
Right there.
Well, they became real mentors of mine. And I just loved their music and lyrics. I still think they are the best.
Have you had the opportunity, Florence, to see South Pacific here in Los Angeles at the Amundsen Theater, the revival production out of New York?
I saw it in New York, and I must tell you that is not the first revival of South Pacific. They say it is, but I did the first revival of South Pacific at Lincoln Center with Giorgio Tozzi from the Met, who was Emil Tebeck.
Yes.
It was directed and choreographed by Joe Layton and supervised by Richard Rodgers himself.
Wow.
So why they, you know, I guess because it helps them with publicity to say it's the very first revival.
Oh, but, well, then I'm curious about this aspect of it, because one of the things about the this what do you, I now see as the second or, you know, subsequent revival, the point of that they mentioned in their promotional material about finding a new content and presenting that and basically adding to the script. Do you have any opinion on that? Did you find that I always find when I read things like that it's sort of like the extras on a DVD or deleted scenes.
Uh-huh.
It's like they deleted it for a reason, and I'm always curious when content is added later that was excised from the original. What the mindset, especially someone like you who is very familiar with the production before that change.
Yes, and I absolutely loved South Pacific. I loved being Nellie Forbush. My thoughts about it when I saw it in New York, you know, I adore Kelly O'Hara, and I think she's absolutely brilliant. I saw her in Pajama Game, and she was just awesome. My thoughts about it, I know the director is brilliant and he got brilliant reviews, but I really, you know, had some, I wasn't happy with a lot of the way it was directed, to be honest with you. I thought Nellie Forbush was not as strong as she should have been.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she really had so much bravado and you know, she was a cockeyed optimist, and everything was, you know, that's the way she saw life. And she didn't know she was prejudiced.
Right.
She didn't know she was a bigot until all of a sudden, you know, she learns that about herself, which is appalling.
Right.
But up until then, I mean, you know, Honey Bun, all those numbers, I just thought Nellie should have had much more energy and much more bravado than she had. That was just my feeling.
Yeah,
about
no,
the show.
I just you have a very unique perspective on it, so it's interesting to
yes.
share that.
Because
I had issues with it too, you know, just certain elements, but you know, not nearly as familiar with it. So it's interesting
yeah.
to hear the
and that is certainly my personal reflection.
Oh,
you
sure.
know, and how I felt. When I saw it, I thought it was one of the most beautiful productions. The set, all of that, I thought it was just magnificent.
Yes, and you know, I must say, and on a personal note, the production that you did at Lincoln Center, which you said mm-hmm. was directed by Joe Layton.
And there is a cast album, by the way.
Oh, my goodness, fantastic. Because
it's wonderful, yes.
Joe became a client of mine, not at that time, but years after that. And what an amazing guy he was, of course, as you well know. I mean, everything he touched.
I loved Joe Layton so much. You know, he directed me. Well, he choreographed the Sound of Music that I did. And Vincent Donahue, who directed the original, directed me. But then Joe directed and choreographed one of my all-time favorite shows, The Girl That Came to Supper,
yes.
Noel Coward.
Yes, is Noel Coward's last show on Broadway, I believe.
His what?
Last
yes,
show on Broadway.
His last show, yes. And Joe was just brilliant. We just lost him much too soon.
Yes, I agree with you. Everything, from nightclub acts to anything he did, was always very, very special.
Barbra Streisand,
all of those early TV specials?
Yeah.
Was Joe Layton, Michael, was that the one that you mentioned when we were talking to Carol Channing 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
She was also the...
Yes, he had directed Carol in London.
Okay. Yes. Oh, yeah, the Carol and her 10 stout-hearted men.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. She's amazing, isn't she?
Well, she's amazing, it's really kind of coincidental that we have both of you on a couple of weeks apart, because you were also inducted into the Smithsonian for the with the pop culture recognition for
yes. Yes, I had to laugh when they asked, if they could induct me into the Smithsonian. I thought they meant me, So I got a little nervous. But anyway, now that was a big thrill.
Oh, yeah, I would imagine so.
Well, something else too, Florence, that you and Carol, and actually Paul and I, which is why we founded this program to begin with, is to keep the arts promoted, especially in this medium of radio, because there is very little of it left in this country that's dedicated to the...
I know, and it just frustrates me.
I know, and I know that we know that you have a passion to keep music alive in the schools, as certainly does Carol. We'd love to hear your point of view on that, and I know that you went to Washington, and you fought for it there. Amazing. Kudos to you on that. Tell us about it.
Well, I've done a lot of work with, it's called MENC, and it's Music Educators. It's a wonderful organization, and they try so hard, to keep music and arts education in the schools. And I did go to Washington. It was a great meeting, and I got Arnie Duncan to sign, that he would really do something about it. I'm not sure that he has, but I can't tell you what it meant to me as a child. If I had not had some music education, the nuns taught me how to read music. I was put in the big choir when I was about 8 years old because I could sing, and they taught me how to to read music. I was singing four-part Latin masses, Gregorian chant.
Oh my goodness. I did
that all through high school. And if I hadn't had that, I don't know where I'd be. And then in high school, I had wonderful teachers who encouraged me to sing. We always had, assemblies, and I was always chosen to sing solos. And I had the lead in the high school operetta. Well, those things are so important.
Oh, sure, of course they are. Not only to your growth as a student, but to your emotional growth as a person.
And also the point that Carol made, which it was funny the way she said it, because she's such a character anyway. But she was referring to the arts as she said, fertilizer on the brain. She said, the arts, it affects all aspects of your education because you start thinking differently. You start thinking creatively.
Well, yes, because you're using the right side of your brain,
Right.
But, I think it's so important. It's a known fact that it helps children with math.
Oh, sure.
Because music is all about counting.
Right.
Exactly.
You count measures. You count notes, bars of music. And it's proven that it helps kids with math.
Yeah, I'm a big believer, quite honestly, that our lives, just our daily routine in life, everything happens on beats,
I agree with you. Everything is rhythmic. I agree.
Exactly. And, while you were doing that for the children, conversely, you're doing something else for older ladies and gentlemen called the Flow Club.
The Flow H Club. I was reading about the Flow H Club. I'm sorry, Michael, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I was reading about the Flow H Club, and I just got to preface by saying I love my father dearly. Okay.
But he drives you crazy asking you questions about the computer.
I love him dearly, and he's a very, very bright man. He had his own business for years and years, and but it's not his fault that he did not grow up, as I did, with this architect, this computer architecture developing around me while I was growing. And so I do help him out. And reading about this Flow H Club, which is help for seniors with computer issues, but I know
right.
would please go describe that, because I think it's just a brilliant idea.
Well, we call it kind of like road service for your computer. And it's a telephone system, and all the operators are North American-based, and they're very patient. They're there 24/7. They will stay on the line with you as long as you need. They're very patient, very caring, and, you know, no question is too small or too great. And I just think that a lot of older people, as I was, are so intimidated by the technology of today because we didn't grow up with it.
Well, that's
and
just
it's
it.
Only like in the last year and a half that I can do email, I can Skype, I can do these things. And before I would say, oh, you know, I don't have time for it, or no, I'm not interested. I was, but I was terrified.
Right. Well, that's I think the biggest issue. It's not an issue of ability. It's an issue of fear, because I know the way my father is about it. He's convinced if you hit the wrong button, a waffle is going to pop out of the thing and blind him or something. It's something.
Yeah, or a hand is going to come out of the computer and strangle you.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
It's very intimidating.
Now, isn't it? I'm sorry to interrupt you, but did I also see that there's the option of, you mentioned it by the phone, but there's also the option of them basically being almost like, I know Log Me In is one of those services where they can actually...
Well, yes, with your permission. Well, you call them, you know,
right.
first, and then with your permission, they take over your computer. And you see the mouse move, you see everything they're doing. They teach you. They don't get your personal information. It's really quite amazing. And my manager, who's very computer savvy, and grew up with them, and she's very comfortable with all that. And she had a problem with her computer, and she could not figure it out. Anyway, she called them, and they solved it in like 2 minutes.
Wow!
And but you know, other people call that really want to know how to Skype or how to send an email, and I didn't want to ask my kids because I didn't want them to see how stupid I was.
Oh, my goodness. The last thing in the world your children would think of you, Florence. And
no, they kept encouraging me, and I would
absolutely.
Go, well, no, not today, you know.
Absolutely.
And I'm so glad now. And my phone, I didn't know all the things my phone did.
Yeah, that's true. These are good. Now the phones are becoming little handheld computers
exactly.
themselves.
Exactly.
We do want to tell everybody before we finish on that you can visit, and you should visit, flowhclub.com for everything
right.
Florence has just described about this wonderful, wonderful service. And Florence, we have just a little bit of time left with you, and there's so
yes.
much to talk about. Well, we did want to talk about your wonderful concert act, All the Lives of Me, which you are taking on the road. And it's, I guess by the title alone, I can imagine that you're taking us through the audience through every aspect of your performing life and professional life, and of course leading up to the wonderful time with the Brady Bunch on television and more.
Yes, it's really a musical journey of my life, starting really from the time I was born. Now, that sounds like it's going to be a very long show.
I've
been around a while.
You are in the Smithsonian, after all.
But anyway, it's very satisfying. It's funny. I think it has a lot of pathos, and it's a joy to do, and audiences seem to love it, and there's a lot of music that people love. So it's great. I've done it with symphonies, and when I do it with a small group, I have a cello and reed player who plays like 97 instruments, it seems to me.
I'm one of those
And my
guys.
Conductor, Glenn Roven, who's an old Broadway vet, and he plays piano, and I have singers, and it's so much fun.
Well, it sounds like a ball, and I understand that you're doing not necessarily that version of the show, but you are doing a concert with Bruce Valanche called A Bipolar Evening at Guild Theater in East Hampton, New York on Saturday, July 24th.
That I certainly am. And Bruce is an old friend, and a lot of people find it hard to believe that Bruce Valanche was the head writer on the Brady Bunch Variety Hour.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
That's how far back we go.
That was the one. That was the one that after the Brady Bunch was over, you did a little variety show afterwards, right?
With Sid and Marty Croft, and we had a swimming pool, and Rip Taylor was on.
Oh my God!
Man, yeah. Bruce Valanche and Rip Taylor in the same place.
You believe it?
You could have.
But anyway, yeah, I will do my show, which it'll be a slightly shorter version.
Sure.
Bruce will do his, and we'll do something together.
Well,
you know,
ladies and gentlemen,
he's very funny.
He is indeed. For tickets and information, visit on that show, A Bipolar Evening, visit www.guildhall.org. And again, that's Saturday, July 24th at the Guildhall Theater in East Hampton, New York. Florence Henderson, what a joy to have you with us this afternoon. And we so appreciate you taking the time out to speak to us at State of the Arts. We welcome you back at any time.
And I just want to say, too, Florence, that we're intentionally sort of steering clear of the Carol Brady conversation because we figured you're probably kind of over talking about Carol, as good as she was to you.
Yes, she was very good to me. And, I'm very grateful. I have a lot of affection for Carol Brady and for all the Brady family. But Michael and Paul, I truly enjoy talking with you, and call me anytime, okay?
Oh, you may be sorry you said that.
No, I'm not. I've truly enjoyed it.
Oh,
it's
okay,
so nice to talk with people, who kind of get it.
Well, thank
you. To the listeners, we have live listeners right now, but for people who want to listen to the show, be sure to go to latalkradio.com, and you can listen to this show archive. And Ms. Henderson, if you want to listen to yourself, wait 24 hours and go to the site and play it on back, now that I know how computer savvy you are.
And if you don't, we'll tell you a good place to go.
Bless you both, and keep up the good work, okay?
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless you, too.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
What a lovely lady.
She was. I think that's
the lyrics, isn't it?
I don't know why I expected her not to be, Because why would I expect her to be anything but Carol Brady? She's just the sweetest thing,
It's women like that, like we said last week when we were watching the Tony Awards and all those fabulous ladies, Raquel Welch and Angela Lansbury and the women, that had class.
That's just it. That's the word.
Yeah. This is one of those women.
Just got that elegance about her, and just she was a real pleasure to speak to. Enjoyed talking to her. Really did.
Absolutely.
And I was really, I can't imagine what it would be like to be, just sort of be saddled with talking about, something that, happened, years ago. But it's such a part of pop culture. I mean, it really is. I mean, everyone my age grew up with the Brady Bunch. We all watched that show, and it's burnt. What is it, in 122 countries
now? It is, 122 countries.
That's ridiculous.
In syndication.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like all of those shows from that time period that people attach themselves to. Little House on the Prairie is another one, of course. The Lucille Ball Show. Lucy, of course. I love Lucy.
Yeah.
Got to have that, right?
I watch the older ones, and you just realize, Carol Channing said about sort of recreating, art or whatever. There's really nothing new under the sun. I mean, you watch King of Queens, and it's just, this is the Honeymooners. This was done, in 39 episodes. And don't get me wrong, I love King of Queens. It's a hysterical show, as is Everybody Loves Raymond. But you see those iconic characters like Honeymooners or whatever, and they're just sort of revamped and modernized and repackaged, and sometimes there's an in-law and sometimes they're kids, but it's all sort of the same source.
It's a part of our business, as is our sponsor. I'm going to bring this up, Breakdown Services, Paul, which has been so kind in stepping forward to sponsor State of the Arts.
Yes.
And we're so thrilled to have them aboard. Tell us about them. And we have a program called The Working Actor, which
yes.
Paul is also going to
We're going
on.
To be talking very briefly. I'm just going to describe one of their services today, which is Actors Access, which is an essential tool for actors in L.A. It's a division of Breakdown Services, and there is no charge to register and establish a personal account of your very own. By doing so, you put your profile into the Breakdown Services database, which is searched by casting directors when they're looking for specific talent. You can also opt to receive email notification of the latest roles posted that meet certain criteria in your profile. You can even email out a link that links back to material you wish the recipient to see. So for any more information on the various services offered by Actors Access, visit actorsaccess.com. That's actorsaccess.com. But in the coming weeks, and we haven't actually scheduled it yet, but in the coming weeks, we're going to be talking to one of the gentlemen who works at Breakdown Services in the division of a product called Casting About, which is... labels, and it's really a data source for contact information with casting mm-hmm. directors, keeping up your relationships with casting directors. It's a very, very unique product that I don't even want to talk about now because I know I'll get something wrong, and I'm just sort of doing this on the fly. But in the coming weeks, we're going to have a gentleman named Blair or Brian, I don't know, one of them
or
will
both.
Be in,
maybe both.
Might be in to talk to us about Casting About as well. So thanks again to Breakdown Services.
Yes, indeed, Breakdown. We love you here. And ladies and gentlemen, Breakdown is a global communications network and casting system that provides the most professional means to reach talent, agents, as well as actors when casting a project. So we are thrilled. Paul, we have an arts calendar.
We do have an arts calendar, Michael. How about you kick it off?
I will kick it off. Now through June 27th, you can live on the edge at the Hollywood Fringe, an annual celebration of the emerging arts at both traditional and unorthodox venues. Performances are self-produced by local, national, and international arts companies and independent performers. In the spirit of most fringe festivals, participation is open and uncensored. Here are two examples, Paul.
Okay. After a five-month U.S. tour, Jack Fry's critically acclaimed one-man show, They Call Me Mr. Fry, returns to Los Angeles. The funny yet poignant true story of a fifth-grade teacher from Indiana and his first year in a South Central Los Angeles classroom focuses on his relationship with two challenging students and his own evolution as a teacher who came to teach but ended up learning. Check it out at Hollywood's Lounge 2 Theater. That's through June 26th.
Which I must add is a terrific theater if you've ever been there.
I have not.
Very unique. And Bad Arm, Confessions of a Dodgy Irish Dancer. Yes, an uproarious one-woman comedy with Irish dance at Hollywood's Asylum Theater Lab is on stage through June 27th. If you thought Irish dancers were all curly-haired cutie pies with perfect posture, meet a scowling misfit from London in this outrageous antidote to Riverdance.
I got to tell you, Michael, this sounds hysterical because I never really got Riverdance. I don't really understand the whole idea of why anyone would dance and intentionally not move their upper body. So I don't know what, I mean, it's sort of like...
Kind of like polish in the hot dog, isn't it? Yeah, there you go.
But that sounds very, very funny. Scottish actor, singer, writer, director, and Tony Award nominee for Broadway's Cabaret, Alan Cumming, is a one-man renaissance. More than a performance, he throws a party with his eclectic range of witty, biting compositions from songs by Sondheim, Bacharach, and Candor and Ebb to a selection from Hedwig and the Angry Inch. Don't miss Alan Cumming Uncut, July 9th only, at the Broad Stage in Santa Monica, California, where we were yesterday. Watching the production of Daddy Long Legs in a fantastic venue. It's a beautiful
Unbelievable.
Space.
And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes. Yep. One last read on the arts calendar, from the theater who gifted Broadway with Memphis, this year's 2010 Tony Award winner for Best Musical, Best Original Score, and Best Book for a Musical, the La Jolla Playhouse presents The Surf Report by Southern California writer Anne Weissman, a funny and poignant new play that examines the sacrifices we make or avoid for our family. Catch The Undertow with Surf Report playing through July 11th.
And last but not least, Sonos, a six-member vocal recording group of young adults who elevate a cappella to a new level of musical sophistication, reinterpreting contemporary artists from Bjork to Radiohead with a sound that is bold, fresh, richly textured, and subtly sensual. appear with Body Traffic and the LA Contemporary Dance Company at the John Anson Ford Amphitheater July 18th in the Hollywood Hills.
And for further information about any productions and or events mentioned on today's State of the Arts Live calendar, visit us during the week ahead at stateoftheartsla.com. That's stateoftheartsla.com.
Oh, and speaking of that, before we go into the reviews we have, because I know, Michael, you have a review of Oklahoma.
I
want to get to. But before we forget, I want to sort of put the feelers out there to our listeners and ask people, because I know we have a lot of actors, directors, people that listen to the show. We have a website, and it is called stateoftheartsla.com. But we also have an email address, which is stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. That's stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. And what we would like people to do is we want to do a segment in an upcoming broadcast about your nightmare theater stories. Everyone has that story where they, you know, an absolute catastrophe happened on stage that you just had to deal with. And I know friends of mine, we've spent hours just sharing our nightmare tales of disasters on stage. So if you have one of those stories to share, send it to stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. You don't have to send the whole thing, just sort of send a little synopsis of it. And if we like it, we will call you and we'll arrange for you to share it with us on the air, and we'll get you some theater tickets to a local Los Angeles production as a thank you for helping us out.
It can't get any better than that, right?
No, it can't. So, Michael, tell me about Oklahoma.
Yes, well, Musical Theater of Los Angeles at the Met Theater in Hollywood was there on Saturday evening, and I must say this is a very forward-thinking company. And thanks to the historical fact page found in the show's program, I would bet few people realize that Oklahoma, the production that I went in to review, was the first musical ever written by the team of Rodgers and Hammerstein.
Did you know that? No, I did not.
There you go. And it was also, the show's original title was Away We Go, based on the 1931 play Green Grow the Lilies, set in the town of Claremore, Oklahoma in 1906. I would also venture to say that most people don't know that between the show's out-of-town tryouts in New Haven, Connecticut, just weeks before it opened on Broadway in 1943, only a few changes were made.
Okay.
Two, however, have become a part of American theater history. And what do you think those two might be?
Well, I'm going to say they're songs. June is Busting Out All Over?
No.
No? Surrey with the Fringe on top?
No, but those are two memorable songs from that score. Actually, Paul.
Oh, wait, what's the other? Is You'll Never You'll Never Walk Alone.
That's from Carousel.
Carousel,
yes,
okay,
yes, yes.
Sorry. Tell you, I know my musicals.
You
I?
Do, you do. the musical number that was written as one of the changes before it opened weeks later on Broadway was Oklahoma.
Oh, really?
And therefore the title change to the show.
Oh, okay. So it's a White Christmas deal. Same thing they did with White Christmas. Yeah.
So it was an immediate hit in New York, and it ran an unprecedented 2,212 performances, and for 15 years held the title as the longest-running musical on Broadway. Strangely enough, it never won a Tony Award. Well, not so strange, really, because at that time there were no theater awards of any kind. Of course, this was in 1943. But what it did win was a special Pulitzer Prize in 1944 and a perpetual place in the hearts of theatergoers everywhere to this day.
Yeah,
right?
if you're not going to win a Tony Award because they don't exist yet, we'll give you the
Pulitzer.
We
hope you're happy with it. Now, I've enjoyed Oklahoma before in all of its traditional glitz, glamour, and musical splendor, but its current incarnation, directed by Robert Mara for Musical Theater of Los Angeles, takes a much more gritty look at the life in Claremore. And while the bland and monochromatic production design of this Oklahoma thirsts for the color its lighting and costumes are given only on occasion, it is clearly the intention of director Mara to depict a broke-back yet hopeful life in the heart of America's Great Plains. Oh. And succeed at that, he does. With three standout vocal and character-driven performances led by Travis Dixon as Curly, Gillian Gomez as Ado Annie, and Ryan Oboza as Will Parker, the production is enhanced by Jean Altidel as Lori, though she is a stronger actress than a singer, in my opinion. Morris Smith is engaging as Aunt Eller, while capable actor Jay Rincon's over and often zealous approach to the character of Judd Fry weakens the acceptance of his anguished demeanor and the tortured center of this unrequited, love story, which flickers from light comedy to fierce tragedy and then back again.
Right.
Tanya Posick's choreography is praiseworthy in the Out of My Dreams dream ballet, as is Greg Hockey's musical direction, which ably executes a score performed by a very gifted ensemble, I might add. Musical Theater of Los Angeles is guided by the very passionate and intuitive and artistically enlightened Bonnie McMahon and her team of creative producers, and has become known for its cutting-edge productions, though I am not convinced, while that Oklahoma lives up to the company's past efforts, such as Cabaret, West Side Story, and Ragtime, but it is, indeed, an effort to be applauded.
Just going to say that it really sounds like they're trying to, you know, change and taking a risk with it, which is really admirable.
And I think that's what theater needs to do these days, especially with productions like that.
Right.
Performances of Oklahoma continue through July 18th at the Met Theater in Hollywood. Tickets may be purchased online at plays411.com or by calling area code 323-960-7735.
Okay, so we don't have much time left, but the one more thing we want to talk about briefly is Daddy Long Legs, which we both saw at the Broad Stage on yesterday. We saw the matinee.
Yes.
And I just want to say that it was a very interesting production for me. I'd never been to the space, so I was a little bowled over by the beauty of the room and their set and everything. But the show itself was sort of, you know, it's very much family fare. Well, we kick it off
indeed
with that. It's very, you know, it's definitely something you could not only can bring the children to, but if you have a daughter, you should, because it really has a nice example of a young female character that is thinking on her own and making her own choices and being strong. And I think that was admirable. My issue with the show was the music was fairly repetitive, for lack of a better word. The songs were very similar in tone and style, and it's a two-person musical.
Yes.
There's only two people. It's one set. Now, granted, it's a glorious set. It's really beautifully presented. But did you find that to be the case, Tim?
I did indeed, because it's touted as being kind of a blend of pop music and folk music, actually. And I heard a little bit of that pop sound there. It's definitely not the traditional sound of a Broadway musical in any way, shape, or form. I think by the arrangements and or orchestrations, the performances by Megan McGinnis, who plays the female character in this, is spectacular, to say the least, I think. And Robert Edelman Hancock, who plays Jervis Pendleton, her mentor and sponsor through her schooling days. And Megan's character is referred to as... first name just went right out of my head, the character's first name.
Oh, yeah. I keep thinking of Daddy Longlegs.
Jerusha. Yeah, there we go.
Jerusha, yes. Abbott.
Yeah. Because it's a sweet story. There's no getting around it. That sort of thing that adolescent girls once buzzed about and they daydream over. And in this character, Jerusha, she completes her education at an orphanage and is preparing to leave the only home that she's ever known. And then comes this astonishing proposal from Robert's character. And that is to basically, take care of her education and will pay for her way through college.
To be her benefactor.
Yes,
yeah.
And no strings attached, for her striving for success. But he was a wonderful actor as well, with an amazing list of credits to his name. And they're both definitely, and we said this to each other, at the end of the afternoon, there's no way you can not stand up for these people at the end of that performance because of the work that they put on to that stage.
It's a Herculean task. I mean, a two-person musical, and the whole structure of the show, which might be the issue of why I found the songs to be repetitive, is that it's like a page and a half of dialogue and a song, and a page and a half of dialogue and a song. So it's very it really shows. I mean, it's a marathon for them.
Well, though I don't predict it's going to have a future on Broadway, at least in this current state, but I think it's definitely suitable for Broadway theater seasons everywhere in the country, and you should go see it, and go see it to see this amazing $45 million theater. Daddy Longlegs is on stage at the Broad through June 27th. Tickets can be purchased at thebroadstage.com. or by calling the Broadstage box office at 310-434-3200. Ladies and gentlemen, we are out of time.
We got to wrap it up, folks, but next Monday, June 28th, we're having a conversation with Tom Viola, Executive Director of Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. And remember, you can always find us online at stateoftheartsla.com. Thank you so much. Thank you, Michael.
Thank you.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.